slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballou.
Hey there, I'm Carl Nicholson. Bob, it's good to see you, man.
We
missed a prime weekend golf.
We did. We had the Memorial Day weekend. They let all the fine folks at the Horn off for the Saturday morning shows, and so we didn't get a chance to talk about a lot of things that happened in golf. And Carl, I mean, I know you and I have a very Brooks Bryson type relationship when it comes to a lot of the things in this world. I think it'll be fun to get into a little bit of that. Obviously, this weekend, we had the PGA Championship last weekend. We had the U.S. Women's Open this weekend. Caitlin Papp, the University of Texas star and Lake Travis product, getting her first or her fourth taste, I should say, of the U.S. Women's Open. Third or fourth? Now I can't remember. I mean, she's played so many already. It's great.
It feels like three to me, but yeah, well, I'll double check. Yeah.
But this, but it's great because her, this is her first professional tournament. She finished her career at Texas. They lost in the quarterfinals to the eventual national champion, Ole Miss. Ole Miss led by Kennedy Swan, who went to Westlake and won a title for a program in her senior year. Pretty special for her to get to do that. And so that was a really cool deal, even though Texas lost and Ryan Murphy's program continues to do some pretty unbelievable things. It was really cool to get to see Kennedy Swan and get to see a local product lead a team, not just to a national title, Carl, but it was Mississippi's first ever women's college national championship in any sport. So that was really special for them.
I thought it was amazing. Yeah, great for the local ties. I mean, a lot of our listeners have probably been Kennedy Swan fans for a while. And I guess it's easily and fair to say that Ole Miss is not a golf powerhouse traditionally. It's not what you think. I'm trying to think of a tour player that went to Ole Miss. I mean, I know guys from Mississippi State, and you could run down the gamut. But this is big. And what was cool is to see the emotion from the team, how much they fought for each other. I don't know if you saw on social media, they went into the final round loose. They were dancing to music, and they just looked like there was a great deal of camaraderie. I know a lot of teams are like that, but to be able to witness that and see what it meant to them, their program, and the university was a really cool thing. And obviously to have Kennedy, you know, front and center in that, and now to have an exemption in an LPGA tournament, incredible.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's the, you know, when you get to see those type of success stories from our area, I think that's what really excites you about golf in this area and, you know, kind of the direction it continues to go. There are just so many good golfers. You look at it, you know, across the board, it was Texas, obviously, with Caitlin Papp, the local product, and then Kennedy Swan winning it, but Sadie Engelman, who's had a real impact on amateur golf here and played really well for years, played for Stanford, and they lost in the quarterfinals as well. But again, another great showing from an Austin golfer. So really special on that front. And we're actually going to have we're going to let you listen into the conversation we got to have with Caitlin Papp earlier this week. Jeff Jones from KVU and Kirk Bowles from the Statesman and me had an opportunity, I can't get over grammar sometimes. Jeff Jones and Kirk Bowles and I had the chance to interview Caitlin Papp earlier this week, right before the U.S. Women's Open. And the three of us got to ask her a bunch of questions. She just got engaged. So there's some really cool stuff from her on that and how it happened. And as she enters her professional career, she gets the opportunity to start at the U.S. Women's Open, and then she's going to go to Q School. And so we get into a lot of good stuff with Caitlin, and you'll get to hear that conversation in our second segment. This is our first segment, the Starter Shack, and we're excited to bring you in and get you going for your golf day. It's been a rainy week. I don't know how many people are actually going to get out and play today, but or if you got to play at all this week. It was a very, very rainy week. I actually had 4 days off in a row here, Carl. I was off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I didn't even touch a club, which is very rare.
No golf in.
No. Very rare for me. This rain, and we're trying to work on the house and all kinds of stuff. So A little frustrating, but still understandable with everything that's going on right now. So, but yeah, so we'll get into a conversation with Caitlin Papp later in the show. Obviously, Caitlin and Kristen Gilman participating in the U.S. Women's Open this week. Kristen Gilman already a PGA Tour or a LPGA Tour pro, I should say, and you know, off to a good start in her career. So that'll be fun in that segment. But Carl, I think we've got to go back to the PGA Championship. We've got to go back to and I think right at the beginning of that second segment, I don't want to forget to talk about a few of these things with the LPGA, with the U.S. Women's Open, because there's some really good stories heading into the weekend. But what happened, and because we didn't get to talk about it, I wanted to get your take on a few things. Number one, obviously, Phil Mickelson holding off Brooks Koepka to win the PGA. Jordan Spieth loses the didn't lose. He finished runner up, but in the final round, he couldn't get it done. Jason Kokrak wins the Colonial last week, and the Brooks Bryson deal kind of exploded right after the PGA Championship. They announced the matchup for which, as I said to Carl a couple weeks ago, we didn't get to talk about it on the show because we didn't have a show last week, but I was very meh on the next the match. And so I think there's a lot of good stuff to get into, and Carl, I just want to get your take on all of it. So where do you want to start? Let's fire away on some of this stuff.
Well, obviously the thing most worthy of a rewind is Phil Mickelson's performance at the PGA Championship, which you've got to be off your rocker if you say you picked that. I've talked to a couple of people who said they had tickets, and there's these new types of betting services where I think somebody got Phil at 200-1. But then the company started pinging him with texts or notifications that says, do you want to cash in now for a lesser amount? So
which,
I don't know.
By the way, love that idea. I've seen it a little bit on Twitter. Darren Revelle in the Action Network, he talks about that a lot. There's I think it's PointsBet USA or something, where you literally can sell your ticket in the middle of a round and cash out for some of it. And it's a brilliant idea. Again, the interactive betting in golf, the way you can say, yeah, I'll sell now. No, I won't sell now. Like, I think it's awesome. I think the way they're doing that is it's kind of genius. And especially in states that allow gambling, obviously, and not all the states do right now. But I think that's genius.
It really is genius. No, but to the point, yeah, I don't think anybody saw this coming, that Phil Mickelson with accuracy off the tee, precision throughout, and a zen mindset at 50 years old, nearly 51 years old, could win another major. I mean, you know, we teased it on the last show we had that, you know, we're going to do one of those Pepto-Bismol, you know, roller coaster weekends, which, you know, that's great. I mean, we didn't think we had another one of these, you know. Just like we're both married guys, we didn't think we'd ever have to go to the discotheque and shake our stuff. You know, there's things you think were behind you, and Phil making you fret and sweat and pace the floor at a major, I thought was long gone. So that was really cool. I mean, it's funny how the narrative shift when Phil was offered an exemption to the U.S. Open coming up at Torrey Pines. A lot of the comments were, just go to the Champions Tour, just go to the broadcast booth, you know. And now everybody's back on the Phil bandwagon that thinks he can win it. It's amazing how those things shift. But more to the point, it's incredible the commitment that Phil's shown to the game. You've seen what he's done with his body. You know, the coffee thing's not for everyone, but I mean to go to all the physical attributes, all the mental attributes, and then include mindset into that, in the mental game, and his breathing and all of those things. It just shows that it takes a lot of things to win, and there's a lot of ways to go about it. But I mean, I just felt really strongly into that last round. There's a guy that's been in the fire before. I mean, I think, again, what you don't know and what keeps you on the other edge of your seat is there's treacherous places to miss it on that golf course. I played that golf course. There's just a lot of things that you just can't be off the fairway very far. So that's always a big question mark for Phil. So, but he never showed us any of that crazy stuff. I mean, there were maybe just a couple of times where there were some unforced errors, but just amazing to watch. If it's the last time, that's great. I mean, it's perfectly satisfying, but my goodness, he looked good, you know, from the equipment setup to just being, I mean, again, we've always said it, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson from the middle of the fairway. I mean, everybody else might be start having to looking for second jobs if those guys were in the fairway 80% of the time.
Yeah, and I thought on Saturday when he hooked that ball into the water on 12 or 13,
right.
I thought that might have been kind of the end. I think if a lot of people went, well, that's, you know, there goes his lead. You know, how's he going to respond to this? But I think you bring up an important point, and it's something that if you go back to the match two, which was Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Phil and Tiger, I you know, you look at Phil and Tom Brady, and I think that's the point in probably all of this. You go back to Tom Brady maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. There are pictures of him a little bigger, had a little weight on his face, that kind of stuff. And Phil, obviously, the commercial that he shot where he's dodging the golf balls and all that kind of stuff. He's bigger in the face. Like, he's just a bigger guy at the time. And what they did to transform their bodies, and they went about it different ways. I mean, Tom Brady's on more of a green type diet, whereas Phil is all about the coffee and, you know, all that stuff. They obviously work out, you know, tremendously. But to see what they did at, you know, 41, 42 with Tom Brady in the NFL, and Tom Brady could probably play another 3 or 4 years. I mean, his body's in that kind of shape. To see what Phil did at 50, I think it puts in a lot of people's minds things that you can do to your body to make it a lot better. And whatever the path is, and obviously, look, those guys, the other side of that is those guys obviously have more money in the world than anybody, so they can do a lot of those things. They sure have the time to work out as much as they need to work out. They can buy the best, you know, trainers in the world, the best foods in the world, like all that kind of stuff. So there is a little bit of a difference on that front, but it does put in your mind, like, there are things you can do to get a lot healthier than what you are now. And I think to see those guys do that at that age, number one, it shows you that it's not just about, in golf, especially, it doesn't matter how old you are or it's all about how you go about the game and how your mental status and some of the physical stuff is obviously helpful, but it was really special to see. I think to see both those guys doing what they're doing was really special, especially for a couple guys that are in their 40s watching it on the outside.
Well, I love that the narrative is gone there, that it can be something that's inspirational. I mean, people always point to their 40s as, well, that's when it all starts to go. You start to lose muscle mass and you get active with kids and career and other things. And your body gets shifted down the priority list. So I think it's another, I mean, there's so many, when Phil wins and he does it like this, there's always so many things that spur conversation, but the fact that you can point to fitness and a good mindset out on the golf course, it's just like, this guy's still teaching us things in, you know, three decades into his career, three full decades into his career. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. So, and he goes up another notch in the pantheon of all time great players. I mean, let's face it, 6 majors is a big deal. I mean, you're talking about Lee Trevino territory. You're talking about on pace with guys like Arnold Palmer. And I mean, really, really, really up in the pantheon when you add career wins into that and the situations he's put himself in and all the Ryder Cups that he's been a part of. And it's great for the sport that the conversation now goes to, could you do the Ryder Cup without him at this point? You know,
that is going to be, that's an interesting conversation. And I think what makes the U.S. Ryder Cup team so interesting now is, number one, I mean, what does Steve Stricker do? Does he include Phil Mickelson? I don't know that he's convinced he has to. I really don't. I don't know that I don't think that's – I mean, again, we're still, you know, a little bit away.
He's got time, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a little time. But I think the other thing that's really going to be interesting, and this is a little bit of a shift here, is, I mean, Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau are going to be on that team. So –
in those rooms together.
It's going to be in those rooms together. So can they separate whatever drama there actually is? And again, I don't know that there's – maybe this is a little bit – to me, a little bit. I'm not – I don't think Brooks would do something like this. I really don't. It feels a little forced. Like, it feels like a little – I feel like Brooks does not like Bryson. I don't think there's a question about that.
That's clear.
But then, like, he starts tweeting, like, when they announced the match, he's tweeting to Aaron Rodgers, oh, Aaron, I'm sorry, bro, that you have to play with him. And then Bryson's tweeting back that I live rent-free in your head. And it got to a point where I was like, is this staged? Like, how much of this stuff is – are they really doing this? And how much of it is, like, they're trying – And I, you know me, Carl, we've talked about this a ton on this show. I want that personality out there for those guys. I think what the way they do it on the European tour and the way they draw the personalities of those guys is amazing.
Right.
Rory and Ian Poulter and you go down the list of a lot of guys that really, you know, obviously Eddie Pepperell, they all show their personalities and we don't get that a lot. And so when we do get something, I'm not trying to bash it or say, but like, part of me was just kind of like, is Brooks Koepka really the guy to go to Twitter and try to manifest an enemy with Brian? Like, it just all seemed kind of odd to me. I guess sometimes you just get a feeling of like, this just doesn't seem like it's all hatred and they're all like, they really don't like you. I don't know. I just feel like there's something else there that's not, hasn't come out yet.
Well, there's multiple possibilities, right? I mean, obviously it could be that real, but at that time you'd have to embrace it. It's that petty, you know, I live rent free in your head. I mean, squabbling on social media.
I thought it was great. Yeah. I thought it was great. I did.
Right. You know, and maybe they're just going for the incentive money for creating stuff on social media. I mean, I think they're the leaders in the clubhouse at this point. I mean, I you know, in my opinion, I mean, and listen, I'm here for it. I mean, if it's genuine and these guys come to blows and there's more to it. And I think a lot of fans feel that way. I mean, a lot of fans have emotional reactions to these guys. You know, Brooks, because he just doesn't give as much. I mean, it comes off as a little too laid back, a little too close to the vest. And then the overconfidence sometimes, which manifested in the PGA Championship, where he felt like, you know, this is where I expect to be. Winning is just part of the protocol, and being you know, in the final group is just, you know, just part of where it worked, you know, what, you know, of course anybody in the field could say that, but it comes off, I want to say poorly, but it comes off as very brash. So Brooks is kind of an odd enigma, and then fans have a big reaction. I mean, there's big reactions to both sides on Bryson DeChambeau. So,
and look, people don't like Bryson. I mean, there's a large collective group of golf fans that do not like Bryson, and they have their reasons, and that's fine. I thought it was fantastic that he fired back. I mean, I thought that was where, like, when he put out the rent free in your head, like, to me, that like gave me more respect for Bryson, because he's not going to back down from Brooks. He's not going to just be like, I'm going to sit in the shadows and let him say whatever he wants to say, whatever. Like, he was willing to fire back. And I feel like that gave me a little more respect for Bryson. I think both of them have their fans that do not like them, and to me, that goes back to what I was saying. That's very rare in this game right now. There aren't a lot of guys that you go, oh man, I can't stand so and so. That's an American. I can't stand Jordan Spieth. I can't stand Patrick Cantlay. I can't stand. But you have your Patrick Reeds and your your even Justin Thomas a little bit because of what happened with his slur. I think there are people that don't like him for that, but I mean, whatever. He was genuinely apologetic and genuinely a good guy. So I think he's, you know, kind of moved past that a little bit. But Brooks and Bryson and Patrick Reed are the three guys that are just the polarizing figures in the game right now. And that's good for golf. You need that in this game.
Wholeheartedly agree because it can't be too vanilla. There's a large percentage of the tour that could walk through the airport or Home Depot or the local HEB and you know, not be recognized.
Think about Hideki Matsuyama leaves the Masters with his jacket like on his shoulder, and he's sitting in the Atlanta airport, and like there's one person that takes a picture and sends it out. Like, that was the only picture we saw. It wasn't like there were a million people snapping. If Jordan Spieth walking through the Dallas airport or the Atlanta airport even then, with his Masters jacket hung over his shoulder going to a commercial flight to go wherever, like, everybody's going to be taking pictures and trying to get photos or whatever. And Hideki Matsuyama's just sitting by himself with his entourage and, like, has his jacket. And it's just that's where you go. You're exactly right, Carl. Like, you can just walk through a Home Depot and not know who Gary Woodland is as he walks through. I mean, you and I would, but a lot of people wouldn't.
Right. It's like a lot of people said when Payne Stewart wore his regular clothes, just a t-shirt and jeans, you didn't recognize him. But again, there's so many guys on tour that have followed the country club route and the competitive junior route. And, you know, hey, guys look a lot the same in a Peter Millar shirt and a cap. I mean, but again, I still think in terms of personalities, I mean, like you said, you mentioned JT, you mentioned Jordan. I think this feels like, I mean, Colin Morikawa playing well at the Memorial this weekend calls to mind, that there's just such a rich time. I mean, I feel firm in calling this a golden era of talent on the PGA Tour, plus personalities, plus guys that are, I mean, Hideki becoming a global superstar. It's the polar opposite case there in Asia, there in Japan. I mean, he's now a major, major star in his native country. And again, that's good for the global game. I mean, that's good for the global game. But I think there's so many personalities. I mean, I wish for Patrick Reed that there was more of an acceptance and some things hadn't gone some ways. And hopefully there's a redemption chapter in the Patrick Reed story. But there's a big part of me that's like, man, we need some villains. I mean, we need some guys that the people, you know, just have a different kind of emotional reaction to, have a different kind of visceral reaction when they see them come up. It's funny, walking tournament, you know, again, I don't know. I wouldn't say that it's racist or jingoistic or anything, but I remember going to the Masters a couple of times early, like way back, a few years back, or going to some Shell Houston Opens. And when like one of the most likable guys, Jose Maria Olazabal, would come up, oh, one of those foreigners. I'm way up on the leader. You know, that kind of mentality. I don't think there's that much of that mentality anymore, where it's about race or you know, country of origin or anything like that. But so I'm glad that it shifted to personality, because that always made me uncomfortable. It's just like, if you played well enough to win and be on the leaderboard, there are no bad champions in my mind. And I know there's, you know, I mean, I left a lot of money on the table when Danny Willett won the Masters, but I don't hate Danny Willett. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? So
I'm with you. And before we hit a break real quick, I do want to get your thoughts on the match, because
now you're going to, I mean, you know how Matt I am. I know that it's Phil and Bryson, and it's Tom. Is Steph Curry the fourth?
Yeah,
we talked about it. We talked about it on social media. We texted about it, and I'm so mad. I don't even know who the fourth guy is. Is it Steph Curry?
You're putting me on the spot here.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, when they rev it up, and I think you're in television. I think it's a great television production. I'll end up watching it. I'll end up being drawn in by some, whether it's Charles Barkley or Justin.
No, it's Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers. There you see. Yeah, I don't know. Somebody mentioned
about that too, because I just said Brooks was like apologizing to Aaron Rodgers because he had to play
right
with Tyson.
Sorry for throwing you off there. But, you know, but that's how disengaged I am at this moment. But again, I mean, it's probably going to catch me at the right week at the right time, and I'll end up digging in, because, I mean, they've been largely watchable, these matches, I think. I mean, in my opinion, I'm just a golf geek, but
I thought, like, I even thought Phil and Tiger was just kind of mad, Shadow Creek.
That might have been the weakest one. Yeah,
that felt almost forced in a lot of ways. Where I was like, I don't know. I just didn't love it. Having Barkley involved is always good. So I thought, I think that'll be a good part of it. They're coming out of the Rocket Mortgage and going into the John Deere. So it's not like this is a crazy time. Bryson actually at the Rocket Mortgage. Bryson's the defending champion, so he'll play there and then come out and go to Big Sky, Montana for the match four, well, that's the thing. whatever this is. But
I think Moonlight Basin might be the star of the show because Montana golf is exceptionally good, and I don't think that many people, if you're not from that region and you don't gravitate that way in your travels, I think it's going to be a revelation. I've had conversations being in the golf business. The Big Sky is, I mean, it's clearly the next big ski destination with the infrastructure and the luxury hotels. I mean, that's happening. I mean, that sea change is happening. Yeah, that Big Sky area is going to be huge in the luxury travel and ski area. But golf is already a part of that. There's already foothold of great golf courses there. I feel like with the way the economy is going and those sort of trends are happening, Big Sky's one to watch in terms of destination travel.
Well, they're going to play it there, and it's going to, I mean, obviously it's gorgeous, and it's, but I think in the end, it's all of this is, you know, without a pandemic going on, I'm interested to see how people react to it. I think that's an interesting part of this too, because this is a very, you know, a lot of these were done, you know, maybe not Tiger and Phil, but the other ones were done because we were in the middle of something that was really difficult, right? And we needed something, right? I mean, that was the whole point. And I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not counting anything out. I'm not saying anything's, you know, off the board, but I think it'll be interesting to watch. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to let you listen in on our interview with Caitlin Papp, the University of Texas golf star who just turned pro and played in the U.S. Women's Open this weekend. And we'll let you listen into that. And that is coming up next. This is Playing Through on the Horn, presented by PGA Tour Superstore.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you once again, Austin, Texas. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through, presented by PGA Tour Superstore. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. Very excited for you guys to get to listen in to our interview with Caitlin Papp earlier this week before the U.S. Open, before the U.S. Women's Open. The University of Texas star and now pro golfer playing in her third U.S. Women's Open. We had the opportunity to talk to her. And so you're going to hear Kirk Bowles from the Statesman. He starts us off with a couple questions, and you'll hear as well, you'll hear my voice, and you'll hear Jeff Jones from K-View. The three of us had the opportunity to talk to her, and so we want you to listen into that right now. Here is our interview with Caitlin Papp.
Tournament because of you've already played in two U.S. Opens and you were a top 10 in December.
I don't think so. I feel like if anything, I kind of know like what to expect. I know USGA like kind of like where they like to put the holes on the greens, they like to exercise the corners, and I know it's going to be a test really the whole week, so I just know that you really have to stay patient with yourself out there no matter if it's going well or not. You just have to mentally stay tough through the whole week.
I talked to Coach Murphy, and he said you're one of the most organized, structured, regimented people he's ever had. Could you give us some examples of how organized and detailed you are going into this tournament?
I feel like in general, I kind of have a routine that I like to stick to, whether it's practice or practice rounds, tournament rounds. I mean, when it comes to practice, I just try to make sure I get every aspect of my game dialed in, whether it's putting, chipping, driving. Especially this week at the U.S. Open, because it really tests all parts of your game. So I guess I just try to be as organized and time efficient as possible so I get whatever I need to do in.
Right. Go ahead, Jeff or Bob.
Well, Caitlin, I was just going to say congratulations on the engagement. I wanted to know how it went down. Are you tired of talking about it yet? Or have you had to tell the story too many times?
No. Oh, well, thank you. So he proposed at Barton Creek at the resort. He tricked me into saying that we were going out to celebrate his birthday early. And so we got all dressed up, and then sure enough, it happened. So it was definitely a really sweet surprise.
Was there any golf involved, or was it just a straight proposal?
It was on the golf course. It was just off of the ninth hole at Foothills, I believe. And he had set up a little flag that said, "Will you marry me?" So it was cute.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. I know your Texas career didn't quite end the way you wanted it to. Pretty special to get to the quarterfinals, I know. Can you reflect just a little bit on what an incredible career it was? I mean, you leave with the one of the greatest scoring averages in the history of the school. I mean, everything that you did to make Texas great over the last few years. Can you just kind of reflect on what it means to you and what your career was like?
It means a lot to me to have had a great 4 years at Texas. I feel like I played good golf during my time there, but also I made a lot of meaningful relationships and friendships that'll stick with me forever. And I feel like I just really grew up as a person. I got a really quality education while I was there. So I feel like my 4 years has prepared me as a person and a golfer to kind of go in the real world, and I can tackle whatever comes my way.
How hard was the ending versus realizing how special everything was in the moment to even get to that point?
I think I was a little bit sad when I realized, wow, like my college career is over. I'll never get to do this again. But, I mean, I know I'll always represent University of Texas no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm playing golf or not. So I think it was just kind of bittersweet. But I'm also, like, ready just to see what happens in my life after college.
And when you're going down the stretch on a Sunday, are you going to be wearing burnt orange? You already have a color picked out when you're in the lead on a Sunday in a tournament?
No, I kind of pick my outfits on the fly or maybe a day or two before, depending on the weather. So, no, I'm not picky.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Caitlin, you said that your time at UT helped you grow as a person and as a golfer. How did you grow the most over those past 4 years?
It sounds cliche, but I think time management, definitely balancing like school and golf. But even as I transitioned to more golf and having to do schoolwork, I think just trying to get my practice in, quality time and spend enough time on each area of my game. And also I learned not to spend too much of my energy because, especially at tournaments like this in the practice round where you have a whole week ahead of you. So I feel like I've learned to kind of pace myself and be patient.
What part of your game, whether it's something on the course or something in your mind, are you most confident in?
I think my wedge play I'm most confident in. Yeah, definitely full wedges, I think, are my favorite shots.
Cool.
Talk about last year's U.S. Open. You finished in the top 10. You're right there neck and neck with the winner in the last pairing. Describe that final Sunday and what that did for you and what you learned.
That final round was definitely a grind. The weather wasn't great, so I feel like the weather was kind of a nice distraction not to think about being in the top 10 or whatnot. So I just had to focus on staying warm and trying to tackle each hole one at a time. And at the end, when I made birdie on 18, I feel like I just kind of let myself enjoy the moment.
And one thing I've always heard about you is that that you flush the moment. You hit a bogey in a hole, and then it's gone, that you're able to put it behind you. Or a birdie or an eagle, is that you have that kind of laser focus. Is that true, and where did that come from?
I think I've always been taught to hate bogey more than I love birdie. So, like, that helps with, like, golf strategy. But also, I feel like I don't get overly excited whenever I have a good hole, like a good par save or a good birdie. But that also means I can't be too down on myself whenever I have a hole that doesn't really go my way. So I feel like I try to balance my emotions on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, no, Caitlin, is it because you were able to do what you did at the U.S. Open, do you feel like maybe you're not as far away as some youngsters coming onto the tour to really make a big splash?
That week definitely gave me a lot of confidence just because I knew in practice and in college events, I felt really good about my game and my ball striking and putting, but I just really wanted to come together at a big stage. And so to do that last year really meant a lot to me mentally. So I think I can take a lot away from that experience and kind of move forward in my career.
And if you're going to be, you know, a really special player on this tour, what do you think you need to do better? What do you think's like kind of the next big step for you to become that, the elite player you want to be on the LPGA tour?
I've heard a lot about short game, just from different players around. Short game is a big difference, on the tour, and just kind of honing in every aspect of your game. But I think short game is the main thing I've heard, makes a difference.
What excites you most about being a pro?
I think I'm excited just to meet new people, get to travel, and play golf. I mean, I feel like it's probably a pretty cool job is to play golf. And so I think just kind of soaking in the whole experience and getting to travel and play a lot of cool courses.
A lot of these young ladies started when they were young teenagers. Yeah, you look at Lydia Ko and Michelle Wee and people like that, they're in their teens. You know, I don't know if you're feeling old at 23, but relative to your sport, do you feel like you got to make up for lost time because these young players have been on the tour so long, some of them?
Not really. I mean, I think everyone has their own path that works for them. And for me, staying in college all 4 years works for me. And so, but for those players, like turning pro at 15 or 16 worked well for them. So I don't really feel a huge rush or feel like I'm behind, so to say. And I've been told by Kate Gold and others, the tour's always there. so it kind of helps me not be in a huge hurry or feel like I'm behind compared to other people who started when they were younger.
Have you talked to Kristen a whole lot? And I don't know if y'all have had a practice round together, or tell me about y'all's relationship and how you kind of tap into her brain.
Yeah, we played a practice round today, and I think we're playing again tomorrow. But yeah, even like while we're at home practicing, I feel like she kind of gives me like little bits of advice here and there, whether it's about like traveling or like short game, like working on short game out there. So I feel like her nice friendship has helped me when I play in these tournaments for sure.
Did she teach you how to pack? And do you have to know how to pack for a week? I mean, those are little details you got to learn.
I mean, I've learned it's hard to keep your bags under 50 pounds when you're traveling to the airport, but somehow you just got to make it work.
Kristen, Kirk kind of stole my question there, but is there anybody else on tour that you're kind of close to or that you know well that can kind of help you through some of this stuff?
I mean, there's a handful of girls that I've played junior golf with and college golf with. That I know and still talk to who play out here. So I think having like kind of that group of people who I've kind of grown through each stage of golf with, I think it's handy just to have like a friendly face to talk to on the putting green or play a practice round with. So I think it's nice and gives me a little bit more comfort.
Have you already started to establish career goals?
Not really, not specifically. I mean, my main goal at the end of the year is to do well in Q school. That's kind of the big goal of the year. But ahead of that, I mean, it kind of depends on how I do at Q school. But obviously, my dream since I've been little is to play on the LPGA Tour.
I was just going to say, win the U.S. Open this week. That'd make it pretty easy, right?
That would be nice.
Did your dad teach you? Did your dad teach you how to play the game, Kaylin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad introduced me to golf when I was about 6 years old. He played golf recreationally, so he would just bring me to the golf course just to hang out, and I eventually wanted to start hitting and putting and chipping. And so from there, he kind of taught me the basics of golf, and then after that, I got an instructor. So yeah, he definitely was a big part in how I started playing golf.
Is he on your bag this week?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He is?
Yes.
Okay. And when you were at UT, I know you exploded onto the scene. You won twice as a freshman, I believe. Isn't that right? And
yes.
Yeah.
Are you surprised you didn't win more, considering you've set all these records for scoring average?
I mean, I don't know. I try not to focus too much on my results and, like, winning. I mean, it would have been nice to have another win my last 3 years, but I feel like as long as I felt like I was progressing in the right direction towards my overall goals and dreams, then that's really all I could ask for. Because even if you play good golf, you don't necessarily win all the time.
Exactly. You know, where are y'all going to live, and when's the wedding?
No date has been set yet. Well, we're just kind of chilling just because I have a lot going on this year. But I'm going to stay in Austin for sure. Right.
Great. And what has Chuck Cook done for you? I know you've been with Chuck for a long time, haven't you?
I've been with Chuck for almost 4 years now. But he's done a lot for my golf game, just kind of getting everything a little bit more sharp, whether it's my putting, learning how I could chip the ball better, and with swing, and kind of teaching me how I could get a little bit more power out of my golf swing through technique and a little bit through fitness too. So he's definitely helped me a lot the last few years.
Great.
Caitlin, can you teach us right before you go here? Can you give us some piece of advice for our game? What's your best advice for amateur golfers?
I think short game is very overlooked. So, I mean, if you hit a couple bad shots, but you make one good putt, well, I mean, the putt can save you a par or whatever. So I think short game is the most important for any level of golf.
And your fiancé is a golfer, right?
Yes. He played golf at College of Charleston for 2 years.
Where did y'all meet?
In high school at Lake Travis.
Lake Travis. And yeah. I'll ask the normal question. Do you have to give him strokes or when y'all play?
No. No, we still do matches on the weekends sometimes. But no, we play Lake Cliff out in Spicewood, and we play from the tips. And we do match play against each other, or we'll team up against some other people and do, like, best ball. So we're definitely really competitive.
Can he beat you?
Yeah, he can.
Be honest.
Yes, for sure.
Y'all like 50-50 or what?
I think so.
Just like a marriage, it's got to be 50-50.
Caitlin, what's his name, Caitlin?
Jake Buddha.
Jake, how you spell his last name?
B-U-D-D-E.
D-D-E, great. And I assume he'll be following you out there. Are they allowing full fans or...
Yes, I'm not exactly sure how many fans are allowed this week, but they also gave us tickets. So my dad, Jake, and my mom, my sister are here with me this week.
Okay. Would that add to the stress? Because there weren't fans at Champions, were there?
Not really, but it still felt like there was a lot of people there between media and then other people's family and close friends. So it wasn't exactly empty, but... I mean, it'll be nice to have more people out there, just some more people to cheer when you hit good shots. So it'll be nice to have some more fans this week.
Will that add
hey guys,
to the stress?
Guys, just ask like one more question each, okay?
Will that add to the stress?
No, it won't. I mean, I try not to tune into things outside of like what I'm trying to do, like hit the fairways and greens. So my crowds don't really bother me.
Well, good luck this week, Caitlin. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good talking to you all.
Good luck. Nice to chat with you.
Take care.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you all.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, time for our final segment here on Playing Through, presented by PGA Tour Superstore. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballou. Really enjoyed the interview with Caitlin Tapp last segment. Really good to hear from her as she begins her professional career. Congratulations again on her engagement. I loved her story about how she and her soon-to-be husband, well, maybe not soon, as she said, they haven't set a date yet. She's got a lot to do and accomplish first, trying to figure out her schedule and her career. But they go out to Barton Creek Lakeside and they play matches against each other. And she said it's pretty 50-50. They play other couples, they play other people. Like, I just love that. I think it's great to have that type of relationship. So really cool stuff from Caitlin. Awesome to see. Carl, two things real quick. Number one, Jordan Spieth last week, people were, I don't know what the right word is. They acted like he didn't finish and it was this bad thing. He's right there again. Like, can we not just be like, okay, he's right. He's back where he needs to be. Like, no, he didn't finish, but okay. Jason Kokrak is playing some great golf right now. Like, let's not overlook some of that stuff.
Oh yeah. I remember the week of the PGA naming Jason Kokrak. I mean, it's funny when we go on the weekday shows and we give our picks, you know, that there's the degenerate gamblers out there that want some of those names. And I felt really strongly about Jason Kokrak because I knew he hit it a long way, but he's really, really seen gains in his game this year, two-time winner now this year. And again, Jordan Spieth can't hang his head about that. I mean, a few things didn't go his way. He's in contention. He's where he needs to be. That was a handsome check he collected at Colonial. And don't discount that he felt those crowds. I mean, they were pulling for him. I mean, that's something. He gave them something to cheer about. Didn't get a plaid jacket, but everything else was there. I think it's one to grow on. I'm not making excuses for Jordan by any means. I just think second place at a tournament that had a great field and playing in the final group is nothing to be ashamed of. Yeah, especially when you have the season and the comeback that Jordan's had.
Sometimes I just don't get there's this like, if you didn't win, it's a failure. And it's like in this game, that couldn't be further from the truth.
How many times have we brought up Charles Howell III on this show? It's like, I mean, if that's a failure, sign me up. I mean,
I will happily fail the rest of my life the way Charles Howell has quote unquote failed. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, and it's, I think it's great for him heading into majors, you know, two more majors to go. I think it's great for him to be in that position. He finished third at the Masters. He was up there at the PGA Championship and had his opportunities there as well. I think it's great for him in the way he's playing. And I just think sometimes we get it, you have to win or else it's a failure. And I just think, you know, it's the same thing. Like I look for Brooks Koepka last week or 2 weeks ago at the PGA Championship. He's coming off 2 months removed from knee surgery. Like, and he can't bend down like normal to read a putty, stick his leg out and do all these different, like, what an amazing accomplishment to come back that quickly and finish runner up. Like,
yeah,
just because he didn't win, is it like this failure?
I think the real fans get it. It reminds me of a time when I was pretty young. I interviewed Mark Brooks at Colonial and we did a cool photo shoot and he spent a lot of great time with us. But we brought along one of the interns from our magazine. So I did the interview and she kind of shadowed. And every 20 feet or so that Mark Brooks would walk, he had just finished fifth in the British Open. In the Open Championship, and they would all say congratulations. And we got back to the rental car, the young lady said, he didn't win the British Open. Why are they congratulating him? I'm like, because it's pretty freaking cool to be fifth in the British Open. Then he went on to win the PGA a couple weeks later.
Right,
They saw something. They saw things that were very impressive. He didn't fluke his way into fifth at the British. He played really, really well. Went deep into the final round and was one of the guys that didn't pull it off. But again, took home a great, great check and one to grow and one a major less than a month later, you know.
And that's the biggest thing in my mind is just the ability to do that, the ability to have that opportunity and then to be in that position and have the fans appreciate it, I think is the best part. Like the other night, and this is a quick end to the show, the other night I was watching the Hawks-Knicks game and the Knicks lost the series 4-1. But in that final minute, the crowd stood up and they were chanting, let's go Knicks, let's go Knicks. Because it's been so long since they fielded a competitive team with a possibility to get into the playoffs and do some of the things they did this year. And they've got a good core for the future. And so I think when fans see that and can appreciate it, even New York fans can appreciate that. And that tells you kind of the idea of what we hope for everything that we do. Well, Carl, always fun and so much good golf ahead of us. Two more majors to come, and we're in a prime season right now for fantastic golf.
No, I think it just gets better every week. I mean, we're in the heart of major season. There's so much excitement. I think every week there's something new to enjoy. So yeah, I mean, enjoy that U.S. Women's Open this week. Enjoy the Memorial. There's a lot of cool things coming up, so we're excited to talk about them here on Playing Through.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make it.